Good evening and welcome to the 2008 Dodson Distinguished Speaker Dinner and Lecture. It's wonderful to see such a full crowd here this evening. Your presence serves as a testament to the legacy left by beloved St. John's parishioners Molly and Griff Dodson, whom I was not fortunate enough to know, but I feel like from the stories that I've been told that I almost know them. Thank you to the Dodson, McDaniel, and Heinzen families, and to all of our sponsors for underwriting the lecture series and assuring that it can continue for years to come. I also want to thank a very special group of people who have served as the Dodson Committee this year. Each has played a vital part in the preparation for this evening, and I would ask that each committee member stand and remain standing while I call your name, and then please hold your applause until the entire committee has been recognized. Chairperson Wendy Moore, Margaret Beasley, Cal DeColony, you can stand, Cal. Louise Forsyth. Louise may be working. There she is. Okay, behind Cal. You're too tall, Cal. Liz Frankel. Nan Mahone. And Kathleen Jackson. Please express your appreciation to the committee. Bill Moore said to me earlier this evening that the sign of a good executive is one who can kick his feet up and read the Wall Street Journal, or I would say the religion section of the Washington Post, or something, while the committee runs around doing all the hard and good work. And certainly that's been the case with the Dodson series. This committee has been as effective and efficient and hardworking a committee as I have worked with in the church. Before we move into our formal program this evening, I wish to share with you all a resolution passed by St. John's Vestry at its meeting last week. As many of you know, after recent back surgery, our good friend and my colleague, the Reverend Bob Hamner, has elected to spend more time regaining his strength and his endurance, enjoying the company of his beloved wife, Donna. And in response to Bob's faithful service to St. John's, the Vestry and I offer this. A resolution naming the Reverend Robert M. Hamner, Associate to the Rector Emeritus of St. John's Episcopal Church, Roanoke, Virginia. Whereas Bob and Donna Hamner arrived in Roanoke in 1961, and Bob served for 31 years as the beloved pastor of Grandin Court Baptist Church. And whereas upon retirement from Grandin Court, Bob became a pastoral associate at St. John's. And whereas in the year of our Lord, 2004, Bob was duly ordained to the Holy and Sacred Order of Priests by the Right Reverend F. Neff Powell, Bishop of Southwestern Virginia. And whereas Bob served St. John's faithfully on two separate occasions as interim rector. And whereas both Bob and Donna have touched innumerable lives at St. John's and in the Roanoke community through their love, grace, and fellowship, be it resolved that with abundant admiration, deep appreciation, and abiding love, the Reverend Barclay Thompson, Rector, with the concurrence and the approval of St. John's Vestry, designates the Reverend Robert Hamner, now and hereafter, Associate to the Rector Emeritus of St. John's Episcopal Church, conveying upon Bob perpetually all the courtesies of membership on the parish staff. Thank you, Bob.
Church. while like that until I, until my legs quit working like they should. But I'm honored by this recognition, and I hope to be worthy of your love and concern over all the years. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would now like to invite Archer Heinzen, daughter of Molly and Griff Dodson, forward to say a few words. Archer.
Thank you, Barclay. It's a huge pleasure to be back at St. John's, because St. John's is home, even if my vintage is Dick Beasley. And I still think that St. John's is one of the most beautiful churches that I have ever been in. It doesn't change. It still moves me greatly. And so it's great to be here and to meet old friends and make new friends. Most of you, I think, knew Mother and Daddy, but I'll just say a little bit about them for those of you who didn't. Our mother, my sister Harriet is here, was an optimist. She was enthusiastic. She was energetic. She never met anyone who wasn't her friend. Now, she did also like proper. She liked good posture and good grooming, and she liked the table set right. And if you weren't clear on any of those things, she would be glad to clarify it for you. But I think that for us, and for some of you here, she was an incredible cheerleader. If you were a little bit down, she was there to pep you up, to encourage you, and to help you on your way. And people remember her for that. I've also been hearing some other good stories, but I don't think there's time for all that. Our father was not as easy to know. He was introverted. And so he was known as a Democrat, as a sailor, as a politician. And Harriet and I developed our steel backbones in very unsuccessful political campaigns in Roanoke, where he was following his ideals, and we had to put up with incredible abuse at school. You always have your parents with you, but then there are some surprises after they die, some things that you didn't know about them that you learn. And a couple of years ago, I was procrastinating doing something, and I was playing Google. And so I Googled Griff Dodson. And I was really amazed at what came up. It was a poem. And I don't think of my father as a person who spent much time reading poems. On Saturday afternoon, he watched the Virginia games, you know, basketball or football, depending on what the season was. He didn't sit around reading poetry, although I just heard tonight about some other time that he quoted something. So what came up felt to me like a message from beyond the grave, or at least from beyond the columbarium. And so I want to just read this little brief poem that he presented to the Senior Lawyers Association, and which was then published in one of their newsletters by a later president of the Senior Lawyers Association. It's called The Bridge Builder. An old man going a lone highway came at the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The sullen stream had no fears for him, but he turned when he reached the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. "Old man," said a fellow pilgrim near, You're wasting your strength in building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again will pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at the eventide? The builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he said, there followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. The chasm that has been naught to me, to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building the bridge for him. I think this says something about this event. I see both the old folks and the young folks, and I think that this event is building a bridge to the youth and maybe some of the old folks. And mother and daddy would be hugely honored to have their name on this event. So on the part of Harriet and Griff and the various other little Dotsons, I thank you, Barclay. I thank the committee, Wendy Moore. I thank all the people who have chipped in and the people who have shown up tonight and made this possible. Thank you very much. And now I'm greatly looking forward to hearing about, I've always had the question, how much is enough, you know? So scarcity and abundance, that's going to be a great topic. Thank you.
Calvary Episcopal Church in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, hosts a regionally acclaimed Lenten speaker series each year. Throughout the entire season of Lent, Calvary brings in the heavy hitters each week from across the country and sometimes across the world to preach. People from all over the Mid-South, Episcopalians and non-Episcopalians alike, congregate at lunchtime to hear inspiring messages and then eat great food in Calvary's waffle shop. Calvary has attracted speakers ranging from Marcus Borg, who will be our own Dodson speaker next year, to Nikki Giovanni. But there is only one speaker consistently invited back year after year after year, the Reverend Dr. Daniel P. Matthews. It was at the Calvary Lenten series that I first heard Dan speak, and inspiring he was, as anyone who heard his sermon yesterday could attest. Dan's ministry has been as varied as it has been accomplished. He served parishes ranging from St. Luke's in downtown Atlanta, where his son, my friend, Dan Matthews Jr., is now the rector, to historic Trinity Wall Street in Lower Manhattan. When Dan was honored with the Bishop's Cross in the Diocese of New York in 2001, the citation included the following. Dan's gifts of creativity and imagination have been expressed in many forms, from the establishment of what is now called the Hallmark Television Channel, in which he brought together over 50 faith groups, including Jews, Roman Catholics, Mormons, mainline churches, and historic black churches in joint ownership of this cable channel, to the Clergy Leadership Project, an intense renewal program open to clergy throughout the nation, to the publication of a national magazine, Spirituality and Health, to the creation of the award-winning drop-in shelter, the John Hughes House, near the New York Stock Exchange. It was, of course, in the aftermath of September the 11th, 2001, that Dan's reputation extended so very far beyond the bounds of the Episcopal Church. In recognition of his work during that most trying time, Dan received the Order of the British Empire. We are blessed to have such a faithful disciple and leader of the church with us this evening. And so I present to you the Reverend Dr. Dan Matthews. Dan.
Thank you, Barclay. Thank you. Thank you, Dodsons, for the honor of this evening to be here remembering your mama and your papa and their great gifts to this place and this city. I bring you gifts, greetings from my wife, who couldn't be here tonight. She is at our country inn that she's run for 28, I think it is, years. And I have to take a moment when I shared with the table here. I just talked to her within about an hour ago, and she said, please offer them my regrets that I can't be there, and be sure to tell them the website is www. I said, no. The swag, anyway. And the swag is a country inn, and it's really a resort for hikers, and sits on the edge of the Smoky Mountain National Park. And about 3 hours ago, she got a telephone call from a magazine called Travel and Leisure. Some of you might have seen it. But Travel and Leisure National Magazine on the newsstand has each year at this time, they invite their readership to vote on a little card, the best hotels in America. And so they list on the cover, they call it the gold list, the 100 best hotels in America as chosen by our readers. Diener is number 22 this year. So that's pretty good for a little inn of 15. Thank you. 15 rooms, and we have been doing, she's been doing it for a long time and enjoys it and is, like your mama, an extrovert, and so she enjoys it. I love the fact that the churches here, Second Presbyterian and St. John, that are so close, are also, as George said to me earlier, joined at the hip. And it reminds me of these two churches because I grew up in that tradition, and my mother and father were both elders in the Presbyterian Church forever. And the way I describe it is, if you go into a Presbyterian church behind the sanctuary where the clergy get ready for worship, if you go in there, you'll always see on the wall a picture of Jesus. Now, if you go into a Roman Catholic church behind the high altar where the clergy get ready for a mass, you'll always find a picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, if you go into an Episcopal church, the sacristy, you'll always find a full-length mirror. That's all I have to say. If you were, and I would hope you will someday, visit this inn, it's at the top of a mountain and it's isolated. It's for hikers and it's on the right on the edge of the park, Smoky Mountain Park. And it's 14 miles from the nearest town, which is a little town called Waynesville. And I was there sometime back, a few months, and I discovered that the camera that I had a battery. It was dead. It was not a normal battery. It's a kind of a funny little shaped, strange battery. And so I said to Diener, I'm going to go down to Waynesville and get a battery for my camera. And she said, all right. So I got her little Subaru station wagon and headed down this long, circuitous gravel road, 2.5 mile driveway until you finally get down to the pavement. And then you get 6 miles, and then you get to the highway. And I got into Waynesville and went to Walmart, the only place, of course, you'd get one of those batteries in this town of Waynesville. So I pulled into the parking lot, went into the back, and they told me that the camera department was way back in the corner. So I started back for the camera department to get my little battery. And I came across the racks of Coca-Colas. Now, I'm telling you, I live in New York. We don't have a Walmart in New York. It's 35 miles from Manhattan. The first only Walmart is closest. So for me to be let loose in a Walmart was really something. So I saw those Coca-Colas, and then I did the math, you know, the case of them, and I did how much? 23 cents a can. They're giving them away. Well, in New York, it'd be $1.23. So I got one of those carts. Well, if you, some of you know New York well enough to know that the grocery stores in New York have aisles about this wide, and the carts are about that. Walmart has carts. And so I got one of those carts, and I threw three or four cases of Cokes down on that lower shelf, you know. And I headed back to the, well, I hadn't gotten to the camera department before they have paper towels. And they were giving them away. I mean, you can't believe what they were charging. So I got two or three boxes of paper towels. And I got my battery and came out, but I got some more stuff. Finally got to the car, and that back seat, that had to put the back seat down at little Subaru, and I just piled all this wonderful stuff. I mean, it was just wonderful. I was just free, practically. I got it for nothing. So I drove up the driveway so excited. Dina heard me coming. It's a long, circuitous route. Goes way up the... And she heard the car grinding up the mountain. And she came out to greet me. And she walked up to the car, and I was so tickled, I didn't know what to do. I knew she'd just be thrilled to death. She looked at that car, and then she walked around like this, looking in the windows. She went around it twice. Didn't say a word. Finally, she came to me, and we don't need any of it. Done that? Well, I was scolded appropriately, and we talked a little bit about it, and I probably came to the conclusion that we could use it, but we probably didn't really need it. We live in a culture where we can't get enough. We live in a culture that just continually consumes more and more. And the more we get, feels like the more we need. And we're living in a culture that has more than any culture in the history of the world. And yet,